Hey, listeners, thanks for tuning into the podcast. I just want to take a moment to mention the podcast sponsor, retrogamestore.com.au. Head over there for all your Game Boy refurbish and repair needs. Screens, shells, buttons, all the bits and pieces. And there's a complete custom build made to order service as well. Also, plenty more retro gaming goodness like video cables, display stand and power supplies, controllers, etc. And you can add the code PixelPie at checkout to get 10% off your order. Also, take a moment to say if you enjoyed this episode and haven't already, give it a subscribe or follow and a review where you can. And maybe you want to recommend the Pixel Pie podcast to anyone you know that would enjoy it. That'd be really appreciated. So thanks for listening. And now let's get on with the show.
Hi, I'm Matt from Jelly Belly Customs, and you're listening to the Pixel Pie podcast.
Hello, Matt. How you doing, buddy?
Yeah, I'm fine, thanks, man. How are you?
Yeah, good, good, good. I've got Matt from Jelly Belly Customs. So, look, I really do appreciate you coming on. I know I kind of was a bit early. It's this evening for me, and it's sort of, I think, around 9:30 a.m. for you on the same day.
And 9:30, yeah.
And I kind of like, hey, I'm good to go. And you're like, I'll be with you soon. And you shoot me a picture of a sleeping baby, and you're out walking the baby and doing the dad thing in between the work thing and stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, I commented before, you have the eyes of a father of a young child. It's hard work, isn't it, children?
Yeah, they're definitely a bit darker than they were a year ago.
Your eyes, yeah. It's like
they seem to get darker and lighter as the weeks go on, I think.
Yeah, yeah. That's not your first. You've got, you say before, you've got an old.
Yeah.
So this is not your first build, so to speak.
No, it's not my first rodeo, no. So why I decided for a second, I'll never know. But it's an interesting adventure.
I tend to
class everything as adventures. So
yeah,
it's an interesting journey.
It's a bit like that saying, some people are sort of struggling with certain parts of life. And it's like, the worst thing that's happened to you is the worst thing that's ever happened to you. And that's kind of your reference. You know, it might be a scratch on your phone. Oh, it's the worst thing. Or it might be you wreck your car on the piss. That's now the worst thing. Or you lose your favorite job. That's the worst thing. And kids, put all of that into perspective. It's not about worst or best. It's just all levels are changed.
Of difficulty.
Your difficulty, challenge, reward, joy, sadness, displeasure, discomfort.
Oh, yeah.
All those things. It's like I have a whole new level of everything. It's like a seventh sense.
Yeah, it's a bit like playing a game. Like, if you choose to play games on like easy or normal mode, that to me is just life before children. And then after children, it's is it on Doom? What it's called, insane mode.
Yeah, yeah, you can play everything.
That's after children.
Yeah, after children, you can speed run at insane mode sort of thing. Yeah,
I feel like things are coming at you all the time.
Whoa, yeah, what's going on? I spent a few years in the Defence Force. And there were some challenges, and I sort of think, and then I left and then met my wife and had our daughter. And I sort of look back and I go, if I'd had children first and then went through the Defence Force, I would have crushed it so much better. Because, A, sleep deprivation is like the first week of training as a parent. It's so good. But anyway, all the people that don't have kids are like, all right, I'm out of here. Sorry about that. Jelly Belly Customs. Now, just sort of most of what I know about you is probably similar to others that may have not had, you know, the opportunity to sort of chat with you. And, you know, it's very, very much a Game Boy centric Instagram, as far as I can tell. And a lot of casting, a lot of resin casting, a lot of buttons. As I was discussed with you a minute ago, I was talking to someone this evening about this. There's a one particular Instagram. We're going to jump around a bit and stuff, and I want to get a bit more about. About young Matt, but there's this a close-up of a B button, the Cosmos blue for the Game Boy Color in advance. And as I said to you before, I don't really care that it's a button. It could be the top of a bottle top or a knob or something. fantastic. The depth, the way the colors are kind of just doing stuff. It literally looks like one of those pictures of the galaxy. So that's kind of it's kind of an end state. It's that's a pretty remarkable looking thing.
Yeah. And it was, I kind of got onto it by, with everything casting.
Yeah.
Like back when I started, when was it? It must have been 3 years ago, 4 years ago now.
Yeah.
There was very few people casting things for games, consoles at all, or controllers.
Yeah.
And so I just sort of ran with it. And then you find different suppliers that supply different things. And, and I found somebody that supplied this purple. I do a purple and a blue. Sort of, it's a powder. And then, and then one day you pour it and you do what you think's right and you pull it out of the mold and you're like, oh my God, look at that. How did I achieve that?
That particular one there, I think you're probably looking at the same pick I am, or you know, at least what I'm referring to. Have you done any or much polishing for that, or is that straight out of the cast?
Yeah, that's straight out, yeah.
Bonkers.
Fresh from.
Looks delicious. You know, you could drop a handful on some.
It doesn't
even
look like there's too much of an Instagram filter on that either.
No, right? Yeah. So, I mean, that's now, but I mean, do you want to kind of take us back as far back as you want to go? Like, have you always, did you grow up a Nintendo, Pokemon, Game Boy, or consoles, or playing with Commodore 64s as a lad, or just something later?
No, not that old.
No. Well, some people did. I mean, some people got their uncle's old Commodore 64. Yeah.
Right. I think my first gaming memory was we had the NES at home with Duck Hunt.
Yeah.
And obviously playing that with my big brother. But I honestly can't think that we were too into it. I mean, I think we were into it at the start, but I don't think we were too into it. We were always timed at the length of time we were allowed to play, because there was two of us and one console and one TV.
Yeah.
So, like kids nowadays, they all have their own consoles and own TVs. Like, they'll never know the pain of a kitchen timer. Like, right, you're allowed 20 minutes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what we used to get. Right, you're off. Right, your brother has to go now.
Gosh.
That was that. And then...
Yeah, keep going.
I can't remember much in between that. And then I remember getting a DMG, and that used to come with us everywhere.
Mm.
We used to have one of them big square, like aftermarket carry cases that had the DMG, the plug, and all the games. But I suppose my biggest memory is playing that on holidays when we used to go away to... we used to go away to the Canary Islands.
All right.
At Christmas, winter time.
Yeah.
Get away from the English weather.
Yeah.
And yeah, I remember absolutely thrashing that.
Yeah.
And also back then, there was like in the shops in the Canary Islands, there was so many counterfeit games, you know, all the 32 in one carts.
Oh, really? Back then?
Things like that. Yeah. Back then. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
And I remember like our thing when our parents used to drag us out for walks, when we had to have the forced walk.
Yeah,
we always used to look in the weird little electrical shops at all these counterfeit games that they used to have.
Yeah.
And my biggest memory is we had one. I've not managed to find it yet. We had one that had like a yellow button on it.
Right.
That's how you skip through the games.
Huh.
And on there was things like that Gator Pinball, Revenge of the Gator Pinball, and Mario and Alleyway, things like that.
So were they actual Nintendo games that have been flashed to a multi-car, or they were total knockoff games?
Yeah, they were complete knockoffs. Like, they had a horrible label on them and
right.
a horrible odd-coloured cart with this yellow button that used to stick out the back of it.
Oh, wow.
I mean, if anybody knows of that game, I want it. just for memory's sake.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I know I've been overseas a bit, and there was always that. As an adult, you know, there's the kind of counterfeit PC CD-ROMs and, you know, the badly printed labels on the covers and things like that. So I wasn't fortunate enough to experience cartridges. So does what you do today, like, does that relate to, I guess, kind of you going through school and into work? Like, did you grow up around these kinds of materials and stuff?
No, I had nothing to do with resin at all. Right. How did I get back into Game Boys? I mean, when I was probably a teenager, I had nothing to do with games. I think I had a PS1 and I used to play Gran Turismo. I used to like Gran Turismo and Colin McRae Rally. And that was about it. And then I think after the PS1, I think my next games console was the 360.
Right. It's got a gap.
And then that was it. But as for getting back into Game Boys, is near where I work, there's a shop that does like house clearances and they sell all secondhand stuff, and I'm quite friendly with them. So yeah. I'm allowed to go in the back office where the man cleans and repairs all the things.
Oh, wow.
And I went in there one day and I goes, look at that. And it was a box DMG that was sat on the shelf. I goes, oh, look at that. And I picked it up and he goes, oh, I don't, because he spends his life repairing hoovers and lawnmowers and things like that. And I goes, oh, look. He goes, yeah, it doesn't work. And I goes, okay, how much do you want for it? And he goes, oh, just 20 quid. So I gave him 20 quid and I walked out with a box DMG.
Fair income.
So, yeah, and then obviously you start reading the internet and YouTube about getting it fixed. And
yeah. Do you recall?
It started from there, really.
What was the fault with that one, do you recall?
It was all the lines were dead in the screen. You know, the ribbon, you have to heat it all with a soldering iron and stuff. So I repaired that. And then when you start looking, I think I bought, you start looking and then you think, oh, God, look at the, remember the clear DMG? I think that was probably like every boy's dream, but everybody had the grey, horrible one.
Yeah.
So I ended up buying one of them off eBay and I think I put the backlight and bivert in that.
Yeah.
And then, started from there. And then the more you get into it, the more you see, oh, look at that. That's cool. Look at them buttons. And
yeah.
I mean, back 5 years ago, there was only like, there was Deadpan Robot, which is a UK supplier. There was, I think there was Handheld Legend in America.
Yeah.
And then obviously China. AliExpress, early doors AliExpress, really.
Yeah.
But probably that was it.
I don't know if Ben Venn was around that long ago.
Yeah, he might have been. Yeah. Yeah. He might have been. He was definitely doing maybe the Jerry Cart things.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. And so, as you do a lot of casting and stuff, but what has sort of been, I guess, your main focus? Has it been like, full-on Game Boy builds, or has the casting become more of it? Because he's definitely renowned for, you know, some of these buttons and stuff that you're putting out.
Yeah, that's good to know. No, the casting come about was the first thing I ever cast was I started with the DMG journey. I then started to see all the Game Boy Zero stuff, you know, the Raspberry Pi inside in a DMG shell.
Yeah, yeah.
Through that. I got into that and I wanted to make a crystal clear build. So I cast a screen bracket.
Right.
That was the very first thing I ever molded and cast. And I mean, looking back now, it's really dreadful. It needs to go in the bin, but you know, it sits on the shelf. I think it's up here somewhere.
Was this like pre-3D printer, Matt, or something? Or
yeah, this I didn't have a 3D printer then. A buddy of mine used to do the 3D printing for me.
Yeah.
And then, cast and molded that, and I thought, oh, yeah, that's cool. And then probably a few months later, what did I do? I came across Rose Colored Gaming in America.
Mm-hmm. Did those beautiful overlays and stuff, hey?
Mm-hmm. They used to make the dingy DMG, they used to call it, which was like an airbrushed Game Boy Advance that they used to spray to look like a DMG.
Right, right.
And I think they used to cast their buttons. I think they did cast them. And I wanted to buy one, but by the time I figured out the shipping and how much it was, I thought, oh, no, I'm not paying that.
Yeah.
Probably people think that to me nowadays, I'm sure, but So I thought I wanted to make the DMG button. So that's what started me looking into button casting and things like that. Because back then there was no funny playing, and there was none of these big China stores that were pumping out all these different coloured buttons. Even like people like Retro Modding, and they just had the standard China stuff. They had very few colour. Different coloured buttons to everybody else that you can find. I set about casting some. I think I kept some of my very early moulds just to refer back to.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then from there, like most of my buttons come from, right, I want to make this build. So I then make the buttons for it. And then once I've done that, I often show the build, and people are like, "Oh, where can I get those buttons? Can I do this?"
Yeah.
So that's how both selling the buttons and sort of Jelly Belly Customs became a thing, really, just through people seeing what I built, and then because we are a very DIY community, aren't we?
Very much.
So there's probably an 80-20 split of people that want DIY compared to people that want builds. So 80% of people would rather buy the buttons and build themselves. And
I think you're right. Yeah. You've lent in the cartridges too along the way.
Yeah, that was quite heavy. Maybe 2 years ago, 18 months ago. Yeah, I did a lot of cartridges with my good buddy in America, 8-Bit Aesthetics.
Yeah, yeah.
And then also... selling them on the website.
Yeah, I remember way back talking to Trey Till Hand Modding, and he's got some beautiful custom labels on some of your carts. And like he's got a Metroid on this really beautiful kind of golden orange translucent cart. And I was like, it's amazing. He goes, yeah, good luck getting a hold of one of those carts again.
Whenever I show a picture of a cart, he messages me and say, are you making these again, Matt? It's not. I suppose it's one of them things that I'd rather not get too deep into. But yeah, it's carts are very tricky to do.
Yeah,
they're very time consuming, and they're also they're quite a high failure rate as well.
Right.
And then by the time you add it all up and then put out the price,
yeah.
It's hard because nowadays everybody compares you to China and
sort
of the big producers. Well,
yeah.
I'm not that, am I?
Injection molding, 300 carts every hour sort of thing. And if they lose 20%, they just like, it's all right. They probably just melt the shit back down and start again.
Put it in the other end and push it back through.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I guess what I kind of picked up from, I've spoken to a few people that cast from different levels of kind of like, I guess complexity and setups, and one thing that I think it's almost like being a baker where you've only got so many ovens, and if you want to cook all the cob loaves for breakfast tomorrow morning, that kind of ties the oven up for period X, but you got to get the bun through and you got to get the twisted thing through, and every time you put something in your oven, the oven's now committed to do that job. And so your vacuum presses, they're very much like that. Once something's in the cast and it's in the vacuum thing, it's all locked up. You're like, that's it. I got to let it go until it's done.
Yeah.
And if that was three and a half, 4 hours and it fails, there's a lot of swearing involved and you got to kind of like,
then you got to start again. Yeah.
That's a lot of cob loaves that got to go in the bin, unfortunately.
No, it is very much a process, and I think I do enjoy the routine of it as well. It's like, right, clean the mold, prep the mold, pour the buttons, vacuum, degas and all that business, and then right, 5-6 hours later, take them out, and then the process starts again. It's quite a nice rhythm to get into.
Yeah, is this all you do? I don't mean all you do, but is this your full time job?
No. I work full time as well.
Right. So
this is just an evening and just an evening thing, really.
So I mean, a lot of people when they talk about their pressure, what do you call yours? Like a pressure cook or a press or
So you have there's two things in casting. There's a vacuum chamber.
The vacuum chamber,
or a degas. So what that does is pull the bubbles out of the resin.
Right.
And then you have a pressure pot. So that means you cure your items under pressure.
Right.
So the degas, that pulls as many bubbles out of the actual liquid as it can.
Yeah.
And then what you do is then, in layman terms, you stick it in the pressure pot, and then you put a set pressure in there that you like to cast at, and then that decreases the bubbles that are left to a sort of minute stage.
Really, like, squeezes them down.
It's like so under pressure, if you've got a bubble that big and you put 50 psi under it, it becomes that big. So obviously, on a tiny scale, if you've got a tiny little pin tip bubble,
it's
like it becomes almost invisible.
I can remember as a kid, like, swimming as deep as we could to the bottom of a swimming pool, like with a water polo ball, and the deeper it starts to kind of compress a bit as you go down and down. So similar principle.
Same thing.
Yeah. So let's say 5 or 6 hours. I know some people I've spoken to are like, they don't spend much time in the room with it because it kind of is a bomb. Like, it's safe, but at the same time, these things are things that, you know, you want to respect. And I guess, like, you want to be, do you kind of like cast, like, do you put them on overnight, or you just only do it on Saturdays when you're kicking around the house, or?
Yeah, so I tend to go overnight. So I'm, I think looking at yesterday's tech, he's another big caster in the community.
Yep.
He's got some pressure pots that he has converted, hasn't he, by the looks of it.
Yeah.
There's two sorts of pressure pots. You can actually buy resin pressure pots,
right,
which are quite that are really available in this country. They're easy to buy. I mean, they're not cheap, but they're easy to buy. Or I think yesterday's tech, what he's done is he's converted a spray pressure pot. So that's where you plug up some holes. So that's a bit more DIY sort of side of things.
Yeah.
But I bought the legit one, mainly for the reasons that you say. I don't trust my work in a modified pot that's under pressure all the time. I'd rather... Yeah.
I don't think those guys have had any, like, big dramas yet, touch wood.
No.
But I think they're smart about it. Like I said, they respect the process, and it's done in another room. And same as, like, custom handhelds, Triz. Triz lives just up the road from me. He kind of took some advice.
Oh, does
he? Yeah, he took some advice from them, and I've seen his setup, and it looks a little bit like something has been cut out of a Russian submarine. And and it's all kind of like where there was a hose out here, there's like a bung that's all nice and tight. And he did like weeks of just pressurizing it and just sort of measuring pressure and just going, look, I'm not happy until I know. And dad doesn't park the car in the garage when it's under pressure. Just, you know, I joke a bit, but it's things under pressure.
I think I've seen some of his stuff doing. I've seen a few of his things.
So how many do you run? I mean, I don't want to get into too many trade secrets. I don't want people knowing sort of how you do your magic, but how many pressure pots do you kind of run out, like, on average?
I have two pots.
Right.
One is, I call it the warm pot. Right. That's the one that I use for curing, like, the slower resins.
Right.
And then I have the warm pot, which is just one that's outside. So part of my process is, like, each button is cured in multiple stages, so there's different layers.
Right.
Some stages can be cured with a faster resin, so that can just be at ambient room temperature. But then some with the slower resins have to go in the, I'm not sure if you can see it there, but the makeshift warm box.
All right.
And I made that because in the UK, obviously, we're a cold country generally. Mm. And the resins are quite particular about the temperatures that they like to be at. So they like to be above 20 at least. And because I cure overnight, and this is sort of a garage, the temperature does drop down in here to probably say, I bet it gets down to 15. So but
we're talking Celsius.
Yeah, Celsius. Yeah. Yep. So I built the warm box just to keep things at a constant sort of playing field, so I know that if I put something in there, it's going to be done overnight. Whereas if I was just to leave it out on the floor, it might take 12 hours, it might take 15 hours, depends on like what's the weather outside doing. Like in winter, I mean, it's been snowing this morning. So obviously the ground temp is cold.
Yeah.
So things might take longer to cure, but I know in that box, it's a constant, I keep it about 35 degrees.
What keeps the warm box warm?
It's a heater out of a reptile enclosure.
Ah, there you go. Yeah,
nice. So you know, they have like these little just warm bulb things. Yeah, it's not one that glows. It's just a little warm bulb. And it's got a little temperature controller thing on it.
Yeah, wicked. That's awesome.
I mean, you guys, I suppose you Australian guys in the summer, you're probably struggling with it being too hot.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe. I mean, I think where I am, I think it's, I don't know how this stuff works, but I assume humidity would have a part in things. And like where I am, it's sort of on average, you know, during summer, it's sort of 80 to 90 degrees humidity, you know. So I'm sure that's another challenge in itself.
Yeah.
I know.
Because you're in summer now.
Yes, we are. We're like a few weeks into summer now. Is it summer? Yeah. November? Yeah, I can never remember. It feels like bloody summer, I can tell you that much.
Yeah, so it's snowing here this morning, and what's the temperature there?
We had a bit of rain. So we're talking about sort of 28s and stuff. You know, we've hit a few 30s last month, but I don't know, it's just how it is here. we've had a lot of rain, so that's... And I'm a mountain biker, and it's sort of like there's a whole, like, don't ride the tracks in the rain because it wrecks the tracks, and I sort of go...
Oh, okay, yeah.
And I sort of go, yeah, but when you look at like New Zealand, the UK, Canada, they get this rain and they just build their trails differently. So I don't know. Sometimes you'd swear it's the first time it's ever rained on a track and everybody freaks out. It's like, because you go, gotta respect the builders, you know, whatever.
I suppose.
Yeah. So how is your sort of, did you do there's always, as you get better and better at your craft and as you start, you're like, some of your first buttons were just like solid colors. That looks like a D-pad. Holy cow, that's great. I'm working on bubbles and stuff. And then eventually you get down to that thing we're talking about with that, the blue Cosmos B button. Have you, does your kind of like success / failure rate kind of level out and you just start tweaking it? Or is there always just random stuff that's going to catch you out and the sort of, it's part of the, because I see one, there's a pic here of like a row of B buttons and it looks like one of them's just blowing out or something. Like,
oh, okay, yeah, that was probably a mistake on my behalf.
I mean, what sort of things do you face? It can't be out of shape because you've got a mold, but I guess it's just imperfections and you're looking at a very consistent product. So if you send me a B button from that batch and you send another one to another customer, they've got to be the same, right? That's what you're shooting at.
Yeah, they all have slightly different color changes. Like obviously you can't mix it that perfect, but sort of the failure in the molds now is just, it's either me not cleaning the mold properly or something else has occurred. So I tend to do, and I've always questioned myself on it, but obviously back then when I started the journey, there was very few people to sort of look on or to be inspired by on how they did it. And I came up with a way of doing my molds so that I didn't need a pressure pot. Like I've only had a pressure pot for the last year and a half.
Wow.
Like I didn't want all that stuff. I mean, I'm quite a small space, so room is difficult, but obviously pressure pots came because of the cartridges.
Right.
So
is that because you're trying to force the resin into that finer detail crevices and things like that?
I spent a lot of time trying to get the air out of the product naturally. So if you do scroll through the feed, you'll see that the buttons, I often do buttons at an angle.
Right. Yeah.
So it's like pouring a beer, pouring a beer. Imagine pouring a beer in a pint glass.
Yep.
If you've got a bottle of beer and you want to pour it in that pint glass without it all fizzing over and bubbling, you have to nicely pour it down one edge of the pint, allow it to flow up, and then And then, so you've got a low and a high point. So as you pour in, you flow up, and hopefully all the air comes out the top.
Right.
So I spend a lot of time doing that. So, and I still do that now, even though I've got pots. Like, I would rather get that button as good as possible without pressure. Because the more pressure you put on these things is the more you start to deform things.
Right.
Like, so if you put something on a 20 PSI, then it's going to crush slightly. If you put it under 40, you're going to double the amount that you're crushing something.
Right. That's interesting. Have you sort of discovered that, like, with the first set of D-pads and went, hang on, these are too small for the Game Boy?
Well, they do come out slightly small because all resins have a bit of a shrinkage to them.
Right.
But, yeah, No, I've never had problems with him being like that, really.
Right, so you haven't had to factor in, like, enlarge them by 5% due to the pressure or anything crazy like that?
No. I cast under quite low pressures, I think, compared to some. It's difficult because, obviously I don't go to yesterday's tech and say, oh, how do you do things? Or custom handhelds, oh, how are you getting on? I mean, a lot of people have messaged me about how I do things, and I do try and answer them as well as possible, but the difficulty is with resin is, and the most people who ask me is like, oh, what products do I use? Well, I'm not being secretive when I answer that question, but what's available to me in the UK is not available to the same person in France or in America or in Australia. Like, there's big brand companies out there in America called Smooth-On. I can't buy that in the UK.
Right.
At all. It's not available here. Must be some sort of import rules.
Yeah.
So I buy it from a company in Northern Ireland.
And like,
it's not smooth on it. It's like their own product. So it's a product that I have been using and testing over time.
And like you said, there's a variations with temperature and climate. And
yeah.
I mean, it's not to say that 20 PSI for you is different to 20 PSI to someone else, but based on gauges and calibrations and a whole bunch of stuff, like, unless you take, you know, the exact gauge and measure your 20 PSI and measure it somewhere else, there could be two or three PSI in it based on just the fact that someone's equipment isn't, like, it's a bit bespoke and it's not specific for the job. I mean, you can,
but if you're using this product, this silicone, All silicons are different hardnesses. So if you use like it's called a Shore level. So if
you're talking about the mold now.
Yeah. So if you use a 15 and that's softer or harder, I always forget which way it goes.
Yeah.
And I'm using a 30, then if I cast under 20 and you're casting under 20, you're crushing your mold more than I'm crushing mine because it's softer and harder.
That's the bed where everything's supposed to stay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you, you go on.
It's difficult to explain to people because often they think that I'm just being secretive about my methods. I mean, like, my Instagram's full of pictures of my molds and things, like, they can quite easily sort of take inspiration from them. But as far as products and times and how powders and dyes and stuff like that, like, what I can get is completely different to what you can get.
Yeah. I just while I was looking here, I mean, it's a similar kind of concept. You know, a 3D printer when he's got like four benches on his bench. It's the one with the little mushroom and the game gear in the box. Now, for anybody who doesn't know what a benchy is, it's like a tiny little tugboat looking thing that you use to tell if your printer's printing, there's a bunch of random overhang and you should be no support and it should print out. I remember the first time I printed my first benchy, and it wasn't bad. I mean, I've got like a $250 knockoff Prusia, which I built up, you know, using videos, and I think I'm kind of at the end of it. Like, I'm wanting more resolution.
And
I don't want to go to resin, but at the same time, I think in the 4 or 5 years since I've got this, I think a $400 or $500 PLA printer is still going to be better than what it does.
Yeah.
I just saw a pile of benches and I'm like, this kid likes to print. How have you found, does the process of kind of, I know they're two very different processes, but printing and adjusting and you know, you can go away from a printer. I can go away from my printer for a month, come back, and it's not complex. It doesn't self-level or anything. Just, but yeah. all the same, it'll just be like, I don't want to do this. And you're like, why not? you find that with casting, like you can go away on a two-week holiday, come back and think that you're driving along and you're like, right, I'm going to get a bunch of buttons in tonight. You get the morning and you're like, what's the problem?
Yeah. Not too bad. The molds tend to stay all right. It's just like resin has a life of what do they call it? Like a shell, a pot life. Once you've opened it,
right, sitting on the shelf,
it doesn't like moisture.
Yeah, right.
So like the more times you open the pot, the more moisture goes in. So,
yeah.
Like you see people, you know, the ones that make these, like the resin tables. You know, the people that do like the resin river tables. And,
yeah.
And they have huge, big barrels of stuff. Like I'm dealing with like little bottles here, and they last me a long time.
Yeah.
I couldn't buy huge stuff.
Yeah, I was talking to someone a little while ago, Raw Talent, about painting consoles and stuff. Mm. And he was talking about, you know, he used to be able to kind of like open some paint and kind of fill the gun up and it's sort of like, oh, yeah. And then it was the top coat that was quite sort of expensive and a bit volatile, mate. And he goes, but just due to the supply chain these days, he's got to kind of really stack his jobs up. So that when he fills the gun, he's going to do these four or five jobs. And I suppose if you've got like a sort of air sensitive products, even with the lid closed, you're probably sort of stacking your production up a little bit, as opposed to, oh, well, if I don't touch that bottle for 2 weeks and it goes a bit off, like it's fine. You must be like everybody else facing those kinds of challenges of just
getting a
product.
So if you crack a bottle open and pour one set of bottles, so like I tend to buy in, there's like two kilogram bottles. You've got a part A and a part B. So if you take off, so like one mold takes 80 grams of resin.
Right.
So if you take 80 grams off 2 kilos and then you put that box back on the shelf for 3-4 weeks.
Yep.
And you'll come back and the lid will all be crusty and horrible and you pour it out and no, it's just...
It's not the same.
And then obviously like you've poured 80 grams out of a 40 quid bottle of resin.
Yeah. I guess the benefit, like you said, you're getting it from a place that makes it. So it's if it does kind of go pear-shaped, you can reach out and get some more. It's somewhat easier than having it to come over on a ship.
Yeah, it's quite available. There was a time in the height of the pandemic that I think I'm not sure whether like their supply chain had broken down slightly or whether it was just a sheer quantity of people that were buying stuff.
Mm.
But yeah, things started to get a bit hard to get at one point. But yeah, we managed to not let it affect what I was doing so much. It was more like every morning you had to log on and see if they had some more. And if they did, you bought
three
bottles rather than the two that you normally would.
Yeah. There was I imagine how some companies must have sort of pivoted and started to move towards, especially when they're dealing with chemicals, you know, maybe they can put their hand to something else due to the demand. There was a microbrewery here in Brisbane. I think they specialized in gin. And once the pandemic started, they converted over to creating a hand sanitizer and they just made stacks and sold stacks of hand sanitizer. So I guess there's companies that are doing that, you know, just making things.
Yeah.
So with like just Game Boys in general, like there's a lot of your Insta isn't just buttons. There's a lot of Game Boys there. Would you say that most of your Game Boys are for other people?
Yeah, most of them, of them have gone.
And do you tend to just knock them up and then put them up for sale, or do you do mostly requests, mostly like people that commission and say, oh, this is what I'm after?
Yeah, I do on the website, people can like order Game Boy Advances to their choices, colour choices, but I don't particularly enjoy doing that. But most of the builds that you see, they're all, right, I want to make this. I've made it. And then I will put it up for sale and people will often buy it or
or say, oh, I want one very similar, but can you change that to this?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But definitely in recent times, like with the Galaxy builds and the dark, what do I call it, the midnight builds, things like that, they're just, I wanted to build them, so I build them, and then people tend to build them. So I tend to buy them. So I'll have them on the website and that's it. But again, supply chains, like some of the shells aren't available now.
Yeah.
I'm a bit fussy about who I buy from.
Yeah.
So
do you collect for yourself? Like, do you,
yeah,
do you still have fun with Game Boys and,
yeah, yeah. It's getting a bit expensive nowadays, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So would you say you're more of a, you'd prefer to have Game Boys? Because that first one you bought was like that DMG in a box. Would you prefer to have kind of original stuff, or do you lean more towards?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got most of my collection is original stuff. I've got like a DMG set, you know, all the Play It Loud DMGs. Yeah. Got them. They're all loose.
Yeah, not same ones. Here. I'm up to. I just need the blue one and the white one. So.
Oh, okay. Were they an Australian release?
No, or? No. I think the white one was, I believe the white one. One of the blue one, I think, was Europe and Japan, and the white one was only Japan. So,
yeah,
I've seen them around. I just sort of like, I just bought a new pushy like a few months ago. That's like $4,500. So I'm kind of. That sort of monthly repayment is sort of, that used to be a Game Boy a month, is sort of going elsewhere.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Once I knock that off, which shouldn't be too long, I should be able to.
Yeah, because I know Australia's classed as the PAL region, isn't it? But obviously, yeah, you did get different releases to what we got, and
yeah,
and probably vice versa.
Yeah, but the Play It Louds are nice. I see you've got a pocket light inbox. Well, it's not pocket lights, though.
Yeah.
I've got a gold one, but not box. But it looks like you've got a nice silver one in box there, is it?
Yeah. Yeah, I do, yeah. That, when did it, a while ago, maybe 2 years ago, it was getting really expensive to buy consoles from the UK.
Yeah.
Just because we were never a big market, really. I don't think there's that many.
Mm.
Not compared to like America and Japan. So I found through a mutual friend a contact in an English man that lives in Japan now. So he buys all my consoles for me.
Yeah. Right.
And then ships them over in a big box. So he buys me like the GBAs and the GBCs. And then I send him links to various like bits that I quite fancy. Sort of like he buys me GBAs and GBCs for building consoles from. But then if I fancy it,
yeah, right, thing
for myself, I often just send him a link and for that, and then he'll include it in the box for me.
He's your kind of your private syndico.
Yeah, he is a bit. Yeah, yeah. I mean, looking at it, he's a bit more expensive than syndico. But
oh, is he?
On the other hand, he's also like not everything you. I see more on syndico than syndico allows you to see. If that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Not everything that's listed on. Like Yahoo Auctions and what's the other one? Makara.
Right. I've only glanced at it. It's out of my league to be throwing that kind of money downtown. Just for the. I mean, I've looked at it a couple of times with a few friends. Just sort of like, hey, we could all pitch in and we could end with a box full of like, you know, junks or whatever. And then it's like, well, how do we? What if two really mint ones come out of that box and there's three of us? How do we decide?
How do you fight?
Yeah, yeah. It's a bit like the two kind of like old codgers that find a big nugget in a gold mine and, you know, neither of them can go to sleep because, you know, kill them. And it's probably not that. I like to use my imagination. But, yeah, the Syndigo thing always scares me. You think it's going to cost you $400, and usually the first time everybody does it, it ends up being $250 worth of taxes on top or shipping costs or something. It's like, oh man, that's not what I was after at all. I could have bought these from home.
What's the imports like in Australia? Do you have to pay on imports?
I don't think we have that kind of. I think it sort of depends. I'm not an expert because obviously I don't do a lot, but I bought a few things from Japan, from J4U. Like that's where I bought my light from, just because I'm like, it's a really good website. All the pictures are really good. I bought at least half a dozen or so Game Boys for various conditions and purposes. Yeah. And the price that I see on conversion is the price I end up paying. And I guess it depends. I'm not sure what he puts on his shipping stuff, but okay. I know that sometimes if, you know, certain countries and probably in Australia, the customs, if you write like Nintendo Game Boy and it says you paid $12, they're probably looking at going, that's too cheap. This person needs to pay tax. I mean, I know in the mountain biking world, a lot of people will try and go, you know, like when I was in the States, end of 2019, we went to the Santa Cruz factory and, you know, to buy one of their sweet bikes there in conversion was like maybe $5,000-$5,500. And I was like, wow, that's pretty good. I could bring that home. To buy the same bike back here is about $9,000-$10,000. But you could take that bike in a box through customs and they'd be like, what's that? Blah, blah, blah. And they're like, Google up and they go, yeah, I was $3,500 to bring that bike into the country. So you kind of need to go over with a bike that's crappy.
So that leave at least it and bring a good one back.
Yeah, that's right. And ride the other one over there, get it covered in dirt and then bring it back. So it definitely happens.
Do have import taxes then?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of stuff is, we do get taxed for a lot of stuff. I know motor vehicles and things like that. There's always a lot of taxes. You know, like over here, a BMW is still a fairly decent car to us. It's like, oh, is he a lawyer or a lawyer's son? But you know, whenever I'm watching YouTube, there's BMWs everywhere. They're just, you know, they're just everywhere. Yeah, so we definitely have taxes.
Okay. Yeah. The UK is the same. I think we suck together.
Yeah, we have a GST. I think you guys have a pretty similar sort of thing. It's like a general service tax or something. I mean, it's probably still better than it used to be, where you'd pay tax on bread and tax on fuel and tax and tax and tax and tax.
Yeah.
You know, you talk to some people in America and they have like a state tax and a federal tax and a council tax, and they're like getting triple taxed, and at least they just take it from us in one big foul swoop. Yeah. So
well, we digress into dad things, taxes.
We do. But I mean, it's all relevant. I mean, some people have had trouble, you know, trying to ship things, and customs have sort of gone, Game Boy, no, sorry, that's not coming in here. So, you know, when I talk to you guys that are, you know, putting out a product and asking people to pay for it, these are relevant conversations. And I think people will sometimes go, oh, why won't he send buttons to me? I mean, there's some companies just don't send to Australia. It's like, where you look at some people that are doing like raffles and giveaways, and they're like, sorry, Australians, your shipping is just too much. And you don't necessarily want that kind of feedback of, oh, I bought $7 worth of buttons and you charged me $23 to ship them. It's like, you put them in your cart, buddy. It does. I mean, I didn't kind of like force you to buy them, and the shipping estimate was there. So I think as a business owner, it must be sometimes a bit frustrating to not be able to give that to people without them getting hurt.
Yeah, and also like as a buyer myself, like when I get stung with a big tax and you think, oh, God. But then I know a lot of people are buying my buttons, so they must be getting the same the other side. And I do get questions like, oh, can you mark this down as $1 and stuff like that? And which I used to be able to do many moons ago, but now I'm like an official business with like business accounts with the mail systems and stuff. I just can't do it. Like, it's just not worth, like, all right, yeah, you're going to save 10, 15 bucks or whatever. But for me, if I get pulled up on filling incorrect customs forms,
thousands of dollars to save you 20 bucks. Yeah. I can remember seeing a sign I used to get in a remote control aircraft, and there was a sign on the counter and it said something along the lines of, for an extra 2% of the purchase price, I can write you a receipt for 10% of the purchase price for the wife, kind of thing.
Okay.
I only paid 12 quid for this, I swear, right. Love, not 120.
Comes in with a 1-5 scale plane.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So is there ever sort of, have you ever been to the point where the scope of what you're doing could, I mean, you're a husband, a dad with two kids and things like that. Could you kind of go full time just doing Game Boy stuff, do you reckon?
No, I don't think so.
I'm not sure, really.
Is it something you would do? Do you think if like the money was there, would you like? Oh shit, yeah, I'd love to.
I mean, ask me a year ago when we were like, I think all Game Boy business during COVID absolutely boomed. Like we absolutely flied. We looked like a peak of COVID on our sales. Like,
as COVID went up,
Like I was shipping crazy amounts of stuff. I couldn't make it fast enough.
Yeah,
everything, consoles. Everybody were getting this free money in America. They were all getting these checks. And as soon as the checks land, like you have your best ever day. It was absolutely crazy. But I think now things are calming down a little bit on that front. Everybody's realised they've spent a load of money they shouldn't have, I think.
Mm. People are going back to work and they're now spending their own money now.
Well, yeah, pretty much, yeah. They have to go back to work, so there's less time modding. And
yeah.
I mean, we also saw a massive spike in, like, new accounts opening on Instagram, you know, like new people that were modding. Come 2 years ago, I'm sure there was half the amount of people.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see probably over the next year, depending on how things go, how many of them sort of carry on and survive. It's quite nice, this for me, this being my side thing, that can you hear the baby crying in the background?
Oh, I can. it's a joy to hear your child crying and not mine.
but being a side hustle, like if I didn't open that door to come in here for 3 months, I'd have a lot of angry emails from people, but it doesn't affect my life as such. I can carry on without it.
Yeah.
So although that's good, it's also bad. But to push it to a level where it can cover my wage, I don't think it'll be fun anymore. There's something nice about it being part-time.
Yeah.
It's just fun, isn't it? It's like, right, I want to make this and see it through. And then you think, right, I'm going to make X amount of sets and stick them on the website and then sell them.
Yeah.
Whereas if you've got to find your monthly wage and pump that every month and you have a slow month and
pay your own taxes and superannuation and all that sort of business.
I've always said when the fun stops, I'll stop. So if it becomes not fun, I've always been into stuff. Like I'm a maker at heart. Like I'll make anything, I fix anything, but this is just what's got my attention at the minute. And I mean, I really do enjoy doing it.
Yeah. But what other stuff have you got into making?
Oh God. I had a spell on, I used to have classic cars, have old Volkswagen.
Yeah.
I think they're called rabbits in your country. Are they called rabbits in Australia or golfs?
Golfs, yeah.
Yeah, old Mark One golfs. I had a few of them for a period of time.
Yeah. Game Boys would be a bit cheaper than golfs.
Oh well, yeah, that's for sure.
I was talking to Matt from Matt's Mods, and he's like, yeah, he knows the golf. You'd go talk golfs with him because I think, like, even now, because he takes, I can't remember what he's got, McGain or something, and he takes it to Nürburgring when he can and things like that. But he's like, if I see a golf going cheap, I grab it because everybody wants bits of a golf.
Oh, well, yeah, they do, yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy, really. Yeah, I'll do anything. I've really been this past year, I've really been looking into leather products. I've really got a fascination with, I've not made anything yet, but you know your YouTube obsessions.
Yeah,
my YouTube obsession at this minute is watching people make like leather products.
What, just sort of like belts and bandoliers and just
chaps, wallets and pouches and stuff.
Yeah, right.
But so, some of the guys on YouTube that make the videos, it's just like, whoa, you've made this video about making a wallet and I'm transfixed for like 10 minutes on doing it. I really fancy making something. So whether that'll be Game Boy related, I'm not sure, but we'll see.
I think there would definitely be a market for that kind of nice plush leather kind of carry cases and, you know, sort of hipstery sort of stuff. Like I'm imagining kind of like a tobacco pouch, that soft leather with stitching on the sides and tassels and things. And boop, there's a beautiful Game Boy inside.
It's just something, I don't know. Things pique my interest at various stages. I mean, I got a bit of an obsession maybe a year ago about watching people mow their lawns on YouTube. I don't know why.
Do you know what I mean? You go through these things, don't you?
Lockdown has been hard on you, my friend.
I know. Well, no, you just start watching, don't you? And then all
I remember
of a sudden,
mowing lawns. That was good.
Yeah, but you're like, why have I just watched a man mow a lawn?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know.
I think it's interesting when you just see people that just can do something well. And you're like, wow, that dude has got that sorted. Like, that's pretty neat.
Yeah, but it's not just the guy recording it on his phone. It's like a really well-produced, thought-out video of things. It's a bit... There's lots of... there's two different ways of approaching it, and it's the same in this scene. You've got, like, people like the Retro Future, Elliot. He does very short, concise, 10, 15, 20-minute videos.
Yeah.
Very well-produced.
Yeah.
Yes, they don't contain every single ounce of information in there, but they are very well-produced videos. But then you've also got people on the other side of things that do like one-hour-long videos of them tinkering and explaining everything on how to do a mod. And you think, I ain't got time for an hour-long video. So there's like, on YouTube, there's people that do that will explain to the deaf for a whole hour of what's the mod about and what it does and that. But then there's like the more commercial side of things, like the Retro Future, that will put a very good video together, a very short, concise, and sort of punch it out there. And like there's a bit of a division within, like some people, oh well, he's not telling the whole truth, and it's a bit like that.
That's
why you get lost in videos on YouTube sometimes, don't you?
There's a dude, Macho Nacho Tito.
Yeah,
and he does a little more to that sort of shorter, but you know, like I think if I want to know if I can do something, because I mean my modding is I've done the backlight DMGs, I've done IPSs for Pocket DMG. A recent Game Boy Color, I did the screen, and the first screen I was like, I put the ribbon down the back. And then soldered the start and select buttons on whilst it was taped to the back of the screen and made this little dot. I was like, you idiot, you know? And so I had to get another screen because I was just like so keen and get another screen. I put the next screen in and then I was like, oh, it's not straight. And when I tried to move it, I broke that screen. I was like, so I can have my good days and bad days. So I've got to kind of assess for myself. I'm going to buy a Game Boy. I'm going to put probably somewhere between $70 to $100 into this, whether it be a screen, an amp, a new speaker, you know, a power flexi, blah, blah, whatever. And can I do it? And when I watch his videos, Tito from Macho Nacho, I walk away with a yes or a no, 100%. Because I'm like, that's beyond me, because he's shown me enough to know that I don't want to be lifting pins. Or he's like, as long as you get the screen shit cut properly, he doesn't say shit. He's a much, much better grammar speaking person than I am. You're good to go. You know, these are the parts you need. So you're right.
No, he's very, very concise. And although he does give a lot of step by step on his stuff, it's still only the information that you need to know
to get it done
or whether to see whether you want to attempt it yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's always sort of like, if you can't, you'll know someone that can, and this is what you'll get for it.
So I'm assuming you've never done a Game Gear then?
God, no. The most trickiest thing I've done is put I've done the X Station mod to a PS1, and you've got I don't know how familiar you are, but at some point there's a chip that's about, I think it's probably about the size of your thumbnail, maybe a bit bigger, but obviously square. It's got about 70 pins around it, and you've got to sort of lift about 5 pins on one side and 3 other. It's not like 5 in a row, it's like one, not the next one. And you got to hit them with solder. And we've got a good solder bench at work, and I can solder, but still with my eyes, I was like, you sort of hear it squeak with some very fine tweezers, hear it squeak when you put it under heat, lift it, check it out. And that's, I pulled it off. It worked, but that's about as tough as it gets.
But you walked away sweaty and
realized
you hadn't took a breath for 5 minutes because you've been holding your breath.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. But no, I haven't looked at Game Gears and things. It seems to be one of those things that's coming down the pipe. I wonder if the Game Gear is kind of on the end of, like you said, the bubble of just general handheld retroness. or whether it will really push through and become sort of that next stage. Is it something that you're kind of, are you doing like Game Gear buttons or anything cool?
No,
or?
I've got a lot of Game Gears. I do like the Game Gear, but they're all just standard repaired consoles.
Yeah.
But they have, I mean, they do have a following, don't get me wrong, but the following is tiny compared to Game Boys.
And the Game Gear, people, they probably like it that way. Yeah, let's just not talk about it.
Yeah, they do,
We watched how the Game Boys just exploded.
Like, there's a, I'm on a few Facebook groups, as you all are, but like, I remember when a certain company started to develop certain shells and buttons for the Game Gear.
Yeah.
Like the stink that these boys put up on there. Yeah. Honestly, they hated it. They hated it with such a passion. It was interesting to unfold because obviously some of the more limited Game Gears, like the reds, the yellows, the smoky black one.
Yeah.
Like they're quite valuable consoles and they do go for a lot of money.
Yeah.
And like a company comes in and reproduces those colours, they were not happy at all. It was quite funny to watch, really. Yeah. I mean, there's very little you can do, but...
Yeah. I mean, it's a concern, though. I mean, it's not hard. Like, to be honest, me personally, if someone handed me, like, a cleverly disguised repro of, like, a celebi, you know, Pokemon Center GBA, I wouldn't really know. I mean, it could be in perfect condition and well looked after for all I know.
You
just can't tell. Yeah. Was it the only rule of Game Gear Club is there is no Game Gear Club.
Yeah. Yeah. But Game Gear was a very pure sort of community that like there was no fakes. There was no counterfeits. They were all legit at one point. And like the white Game Gear, the smoky one. Like they were some serious money and all I think they could see was when shells and reproduction parts came about is all they could see. And I mean, it did happen was like bad sellers on eBay pushing that they were legit consoles and charging top money for it, which is wrong.
Yeah.
But I think obviously as the time goes by, more people know how to spot and then those sellers can't get that amount of money for them.
Yeah.
So it does all calm down, but it was such a pure market of you literally couldn't get a fake. Whereas in the Game Boy world, it can be a bit of a minefield, especially with the you know, the promotional DMGs, you know, the ones that have like the Comboy, they have like blue text on the front.
The Korean one. Yeah, that's
that's
pretty rad. There's a few of them getting like, around fakers, is there?
Yeah, and there's a few guys on some of the groups that are like they like compile lists of serial numbers of all these consoles so they know what's a legit and what's a bad one. And and as soon as like a bad one comes about, they all start fishing around for info, and then all of a sudden it blows up that it's a fake and it's a UV print. So I mean, it does have its good things because it does pull out the bad people, but
yeah,
with UV printing, lots of everything's become a lot easier to fake now.
For
the promotional items.
Imagine like you know, people that get around in those like sort of like fiberglass body kit Corvettes and things.
Yeah.
And the guy that's got a real Corvette, he's like, don't you bring that to this car show. That is bullshit. Don't even drive it down my street, you know, like, because he's worked hard to restore this original Corvette.
He's got a nice Corvette with a V8 and then the mate with a fiberglass body shell that's got like a 1600 injection engine in there.
Yeah, four cylinder something. Yeah, right. Well, it sounds like
I think that's the case across all things, isn't it?
Yeah. I guess that's the bigger consoles are a different concept, aren't they? There's still that they're not copying like a Super Nintendo or a Mega Drive, but there's still this kind of strange battle for like the Retron and the console that sort of hardware emulates, doesn't just software emulate.
Yeah.
You know, these multi-cartridge, so you can put any type of cartridge in them and things like that. That seems to be that market. And it's still, I'm still not quite sure how they can do that. But, you know, obviously, you know, I own several Everdrives and it still astounds me that the EverDrive is legal. I mean, they're not supplying anything illegal.
Yeah.
I'm the
I
one.
I think that's how they get away with it.
I'm the one putting the ROMs on it. That's I'm the one that's committing the crime, I guess, depending on whereabouts you live and what things are worth.
Yeah.
Mm.
I suppose in the, and like I think looking at the future of the community and like what we do is we all not so much with buttons but with everything else, we all tread very close to the sun. We all fly very close to the sun.
Mm. Agreed.
And one day if the big man says no, then whether he'll come after us all or just one of us, I'm not sure.
I think there's some pretty big fish that would probably have a lot to lose, and one would suspect that they would take down, you know, like that saying, you know, you walk down the street and a bunch of people want to fight you, you take out the biggest guy and the rest of them will run.
And I
assume it's going to be like that, not some like knockoff Matt who's blowing out a few buttons in the paddock, in his shed, you know, or someone that's just doing a few refurbs and painting shells. You would hope that if they do it, they're going to do it properly. And not that I wish any ill times upon the bigger people. But it would make sense. I mean, Nintendo have done things where they've watched people do, like, there was a Samus Returns Windows remake that went for 2 or 3 years. Okay. These guys cacking away at it. And they put updates and this is 98% done. And they released it and were like, this is it. Boom, cease and desist. So they let these guys work for years and years. Maybe they were like, hey, if it's good enough, we'll just buy it off them. But they obviously decided it wasn't good enough.
Didn't like it.
I just put a cease and desist on them instead. So, it was worth the wait.
I think because everybody keeps saying, oh, when's the Game Boy Classic coming out? When they're going to release the Game Boy Classic and all that business. But yeah, as soon as that comes out, then I think they might pay more of an interest of whatever what else is going on.
And thus the concerns of the Game Gear guys.
Yeah. But unfortunately, and then that falls back to the Game Gear.
I don't think Sega's ever going to come back and start knocking on doors somehow. They did do that mini Game Gear. Did you end up getting any of those?
Yeah, I got some of them. Yeah, they're dreadful.
Yeah. That's all I've ever heard.
Yeah, they're all right. They're just a thing on the shelf.
Get half a dozen of them, put them all in a nice little like picture frame or something.
Yeah. No, they're nice things. It's just, I don't know. I can't, but although I'm involved in things, I can't remember the last time I've had an hour to sit there and play a Game Boy or play a game or something. You know what I mean? It's just between the family and the kids and doing this and the day job and running around doing errands. I get 10 minutes to scroll through Instagram and Facebook and then that's it. Next thing, isn't it, really?
Yeah. So you reckon you'll just keep sort of chugging away this? Like you said, I mean, it's no longer fun. And like the appetite is really there because you want particular things for yourself and the people benefit from the overflow, basically.
Yeah. I think the future is I really just fancy concentrating on like builds and buttons, the rest of the stuff that's like on the website. Because like websites, we're directly competing with China and it's just a losing battle, really. There's so many people in the scene that know AliExpress and they know that it'll come in 10 days. Like AliExpress shipping used to be 6 to 8 weeks. Well, now it's 2 weeks maximum, isn't it, nowadays? So why would they choose to buy the China part from me as opposed to buy it from them? Because obviously I have to put some money on it to pay for taxes and make a bit of money on there. So I think the future will just be solely concentrating on like builds and then more resin buttons, more effects, maybe different consoles.
Yeah, under the things that the people can't get anywhere else, basically.
People often say like, oh, such and such is reproducing your buttons, or there's like you can now get like very early on, I was selling lots of sets of DNG buttons for the Game Boy Advance. Yeah. I don't sell any of them now because you can buy them from Funny Playing.
Right.
So, but I always think, well, where I am at now with my casting is I can produce things that no injection molder can make. Like there is no injection molding machine in the world that can make that Cosmos button.
Yeah.
Because it's a
specific like process.
It's a process that just can't be achieved by a machine. So like that's the thing to do, isn't it? You've got to concentrate on the things that they can't do.
try doing that, robot.
robot machine pumping out thousands a minute.
Have you sort of played around with like GameCube or PlayStation or anything kind of like that?
No, I mainly do Game Boy Color and Game Boy Advance. I don't do any DMG, which I think I should maybe get into. And then there's Pocket. Like Pocket has become quite a popular console nowadays.
Because it's the best.
Yeah.
Well, I think so. People, anyway. I think it's the nicest. Yeah, I like it.
But it got forgotten about for so many years. It was always like the small ugly brother of the DMG. So that people keep asking me for Pocket. There's also the Micro. I do quite fancy having a go at like a PS5 controller or like an Xbox One.
Yeah, do they light up behind buttons or anything in the PS5 controls?
I'm not sure. I've never really looked at it.
Yeah, I've never seen one.
No, it's just like you see a picture and you think, oh yeah, them Cosmos buttons will look nice in one of them.
Yeah, yeah.
But then I've not got a controller to take apart, so I wouldn't know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's got to be a few busted ones around by now. That you could kind of carve up. I'm sure there's boxes of them somewhere. Looking at your molds here, like it intrigues me how, like if you want to do like one button, you've got the molds there are like, what are you talking about?
Tens we do.
Yeah, so 20 in a row, like two rows of 10. Yeah. Have you got like some master mold somewhere that you remake your molds?
No, so I have...
Because it's kind of like a negative, right? You've got to make a negative, then you've got to make a positive sort of thing.
Yeah, so I'm not a big fan of the master mold sort of thing. I know some people are, but so back to the 3D printer. So I 3D print like housings to take buttons.
Right.
So you can see.
Yeah, I can see a bit.
So it lines up all the buttons. Oh, it's dead dark, isn't it?
That's all right.
It keeps them all. And then I then pour my silicone in there. So I just always tweak and adjust these.
So is that PLA or resin printed?
Just PLA.
Right.
Just off the machine.
And so that's incredible in my opinion because like what height are you printing at?
What layer height?
Yeah, what layer height?
So I print normally at like 0.2 and then I glue the original button into place.
Oh, you're not printing the button.
No.
So I was wondering how you're working the layer lines coming through the molds. Right. Oh, that's neat. So, yeah, I can see it. Like so you basically made like a holder. Yeah, then you print. Okay,
yeah,
I'm with
you.
Yeah, I'm with you. And the same with all the other buttons. You just, same thing. You just stick a bunch of A buttons in B buttons instead.
Yeah, so I have these. So like they're just racks of buttons.
Right.
That I sort of insert and then I can make a GBA mold, a GBC mold. Because traditionally in resin, sort of you make a box, you put some clay in there, and then you place your buttons into things. But then when I started trying to figure out like to release air and things like that, well, right, everything needs to be at an angle. If everything was perfectly placed, how do you go from making one set to 10 sets? If you can make one set, right, I need to make all 10 the same, so they all have to be at the same angle, same height, same orientation, and then hopefully you can then get 10 sets out of the mold rather than one.
And I guess with this you've got a huge consistency, which means that the final product you're not having to sort of like flatten or trim off any dag or any of that sort of stuff.
So just very a little mechanical. Bit of flash sometimes.
A little bit
of flashing, and then but that just scrapes off with a knife really easy, and then you've got 10 buttons. It was just a way of sort of, right, all right, I can make one. Right, now do I make 10? I need to make that a repeatable process. So, and then I got my 3D printer and you learn how to use CAD, and then you think, right, let's CAD something up and see if we can automate it slightly. So they all become the same.
What printer do you have?
Yeah, I've got a Prusa.
Yeah, do you like it?
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, I think it's a beast.
Yeah, what slicer do you use? The software
I use theirs, their Prusa slicer.
Yeah, right.
I did have a China printer, but it just took too long to sort of. It needed babysitting, and
yeah,
I've not got much time as it is. Whereas this Prusa thing,
you just ask it to print.
Yeah, this Prusa, just ask it to print, and it does it. And I know that it's sort of it's mechanically safe. It's electronically safe, and it's been a right workhorse, really. It's been it needs a bit of love. I need to replace some bearings in it and do bits and bobs, but yeah, it just churns out stuff.
Yeah, I think it might be time. I think sort of once I get this bike paid off, I can this would be a good one to give to someone. It's like, you know, give someone your old dats and then go, just keep the oil up to it and it'll go for a bit longer. You'll learn how to appreciate an old car.
No, it's good. But like you say, like if yours is a bit hit and miss, and like my first China printer was really hit and miss, and it's just like as soon as you get one that works, it's why did I mess so long?
I know what you mean.
Like with a man with little time, I can't be doing. If I ask it to print something, I need it to print. I don't need it to get halfway through and spit its feathers out.
And the difference between. Mine was 250, plus I had to do a bit of tweaking and print some stuff and that to make it really run. You know, it's probably more like 350. And I think about 500 to 600, I could pick up a Prusa and not have to and just pull it up out of the box and pop on the table and go, make me stuff kind of thing, you know? So
Really good because they do the Mini now, which is a bit smaller than the Mark III. And I've got a Mini as well.
What's the bed really size good. On the Mini?
I think it's about 200 square, 200 millimeter square. So
that's pretty good. Mine's about 200 by 220. So for me, that's normal.
Yeah. And I mean, because Prusa have just released an extra large, which is like 400 square.
Oh,
And you look at it and think, oh, look at that. But then all I do is print these mold cases.
Yeah.
And I might print the kid the odd, like the odd shark.
To
play with. But sure. What? Why do I need to print something that's
It's still the size of a
removal box.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. All right. Well, speaking of time, man, I've kept you for well over an hour now, and I do really appreciate it. And you're probably like, this is the best hour I've had for a long time.
It's good to talk, man. And like, it's good to chat to somebody because some people falsely believe that I am a big account. Like, obviously, I've got a following, and I have a shop, and people.
You've got minions.
People don't approach me, but I'm just send me a message. I'm just a guy. Like, I'm not a massive man trying to take over the world and dominate everybody.
Yeah.
And it's like some people just think you're untouchable. Not untouchable, but like unapproachable.
But that's the both beauty and sort of downside of social media, isn't it? That's very easy to get. It's easy to give an impression and it's easy to get an impression. And I mean, this podcast has always been about kind of like stepping behind the curtain with people like yourself. And it is a good community. I stay out of a lot. I don't do any Discords because I can't freaking keep up with it. It's insane. I just sort of sit back and enjoy the view, and it's, from what I can tell, it's a really good community. And
it's come on no end, hasn't it?
Really? Yeah. And look, at the end of the day, it's like any other thing. Like you said, if it starts to sort of teeter off, there'll always be those people that just, you know, when the 70s finished, there were still hippies living in the forest because they liked being hippies in the forest, you know. And
pretty much,
yeah. And that's fine. There will still be people tinkering with Game Boys when the rest of the world is buying all those knockoff Game Gears. We'll be fine.
Pretty much, yeah. I think there'll always be somebody that's making something different, isn't there?
Yeah. I always sort of think about, like, you know, there's I can't remember someone I was talking to. It was talking about a website, and if you find a Game Boy, you can kind of go on there and identify through the serial number and the stickers and the colors and stuff came from and things like that. It's a little bit of a Wikipedia, and they do a lot of consoles. It's a really good website. You know, there's people that are just, they know where things came from, but let's say 20 years from now, someone finds this, this Game Boy here, this is UV printed with an alien on the front, and they have some batteries and a cartridge, and they're like, wow, I didn't know Nintendo put these out. This is insane. Yeah. Like, you look at the shit we find in the bottom of pyramids and we think, that's amazing. And it might have been nothing. It might have been the way, you know, they find all these things where they think it was some sort of battery. And it turns out it was just a bit of oxidized shaft with a, you know, an apple on it, and it all kind of turned into a fossil. So, it'll be interesting. Well,
like 4 years ago, it was just about repairing consoles, whereas like consoles now have become like they're almost a form of artwork, aren't they?
Yeah.
With what you can do with them.
Yeah.
Like they've gone past like just a gray box, haven't they?
They definitely have. And I think it's the really good stories when I hear people that like their focus is on like, give me your old Game Boy because now you're mid to late 30s and your eyes aren't great, but you have fond memories of it because your mum gave it to you when you went through Hong Kong on the way to America. And I'll put a new screen in it and I'll clean the lens up and I'll give it back to you and you'll be able to play it again, you know? And they're the really good stories when people are just like, wow, I remember this. And they might put it in their drawer again, but they get to kind of relive those memories. You know,
yeah, pretty much.
All right, well, look, I will definitely let you go in a bit. I always sort of towards the end do a little bit of a shout out for someone that I'm kind of like just watching on Instagram. I think they deserve a bit more attention. And like this time I'm going to do it's Bund_P_mods, Mike, and I just some nice photography, you know, like I always sort of say in my feed. So it's Bund_P_ Mods, M-O-D-S. And Mike just gets amongst it, you know. There was a kind of a Halloween thing going on, obviously around Halloween, and he had his that nice GBC, sort of like looks like it's got blood all through it, and there was a hand cut off. And whenever there's kind of like themed builds, Mike's always amongst it. There was one there about danger. And I think he had one kind of like near a lawnmower and in a blender, and he's got a micro there in a blender. As like, oh my god, I hope it was unplugged. I have a thing with blenders. I always feel like if I'm going to be near it, the PowerPoint has to be off because I don't want to be that moment where my house gets taken over by some sort of like poltergeist, and I don't know. It's dumb.
Struck by lightning and powered up.
That's right. It's dumb. It's dumb. But Mike just has some good builds, and I think he's just one of those guys that just enjoys Game Boys and retro gaming, and it's nice to just see people enjoying it.
And his account has gone from like not only is he modifying, like they also take great photos.
Yeah. Now, I like stuff like that in my feed because it makes me want to go and do stuff.
like he's hitting a golf ball off the top of an SP.
I know. Well,
did he actually take that shot? That's what I want to know.
I don't know. If he swings like me, that SP is toast. I like the one on the microwave's clever because the light's on, which usually means the microwave's running.
Oh, okay.
And it says like 121. So has it got a minute 21 to go?
Oh, no. I think I've seen this guy before because he made a cart out of wood.
Oh, yeah, that's a little bit further down there.
Yeah.
Down there, yeah.
It's really weird because obviously being quite involved in Instagram, you see all these builds and you think, oh, yeah, that's cool, but then you don't dive too far into the profile.
Because it's in your feed and just sort of flashes past and you're like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
Mm. Good stuff. Well, yeah, that's me. That's mine for the week. So now is your opportunity, Matt. Like, you can plug yourself or other people, or you can just say thanks for the fish.
Yeah, I don't know. It's difficult to pick any out, really, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
Oh God, let me see.
Before you do, Mike's got a picture there of like it's a leather thing that holds a GB, a pocket, and a couple of cartridges. It's just down below the chainsaw.
What?
So you see the pictures with the chainsaw?
Oh yeah, I've seen that. Oh yeah.
So there you go. See, people want
is that my inspiration?
People want leather things for their Game Boys, mate.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just one of them things that you start, you get down the depth of YouTube, and it's like, oh yeah, I quite fancy making that. And like the leather guys make really nice. Is it AMSR videos? Like it's all dead quiet, and you hear all the tools making
punching
the noise
and stitching and snap snap and the creaking of leather and stuff. Yeah,
it's just quite a bit of watching for me.
Yeah.
But who would I like to shout out? There's anyway, loads of people, really.
Yeah,
I
mean,
just generally all my customers that have ever bought anything, really.
Yeah.
And I know that's a bit broad, but it all helps make the next thing, doesn't it? Like, I can't make the next thing without selling the old thing.
Last thing. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, that's, I can mean, appreciate that.
Who's been up in my DMs lately?
Why yeah,
there's people like Retro Game Evo.
Like, yeah,
we've been having a bit of back and forth about some ideas.
Yep, Jonas is a good egg.
Yeah, he's all right. Who else? I mean, it's been a bit quiet for me. Obviously, I've been off with the baby for a few months, so I've come back to Instagram, and it seems like a whole new world of people. But yeah, and then there's also Game Boy 777.
Oh yeah, Julianne. Yep.
From I think she's from Germany. She's been a great customer over the years. Really.
She puts food on so many Game Boy modders' tables.
Yeah, she comes at me with, "Oh, I want this color," or she'll just order. She has done orders where she just thought, "Right, I want 10 different colors, just whatever."
Right.
Just make me 10 different colors. So yeah. Other shout outs, another podcast, the Business RPG. I think you were on there a few months ago.
Yep, been on with Sir Isaac.
His silky tones.
Yeah, yeah. He's a funny lad, isn't he?
There's 8-bit aesthetics. He's a good friend of mine that we do a lot of work together. And I'm sorry if I've missed anyone else out, but that's a lot, really. God, when you scroll through your Instagram, man,
that's cool. Well, dude, I really, like I said, I really do appreciate you taking your time out from this could have been an hour and 27 minute nap. You never know. You could have just told the missus.
I don't nap.
You could have just told her, "I'm going to do a podcast," and just like, so you could record.
Maybe I'll book it in for next week as well.
Yeah, yeah. Could you come every Saturday? That'd be great. But you could have just this and just play it every time you're going down and just like play it real loud. Yeah. She'll think you're down here doing a podcast.
And then like, I can
curl up next to
the floor asleep. Could awesome. Do that, yeah.
Yeah, just maybe. She's
all got, right, Scott. No, it's been great.
She's got two kids. You might not be able to put that one past her.
No. With one kid, I used to get with one child, I used to get a bit of leeway. Well, with two, you get no leeway. So
constantly in debt.
Yeah. Yeah, constantly doing something. Got to do this. Mm. So, yeah. And seeing as she's at home all week and I'm at work.
Yeah,
and really, work is a bit quiet. So, like, it's a quiet time for me at work
compared to being at home and
compared to what she's got. So, yeah. No,
awesome. Yeah, really appreciate it. Love your buttons and stuff. And I love it every time someone's like, "Button from Jelly Belly." And yeah, now I can sort of, it's always awesome to know the person that's,
yeah,
because like you said, it's very easy to assume that you're sitting back, you know, pushing tanks across the map and saying, "Well, I want my forces here, here, and here." And
yeah,
it turns out 9 times out of 10, the people that you think are like that are just some dude with a warm box in his garage. And
next to his washing machine.
Next to his washing machine. Yeah.
And I think that, and next to the Hoover that's in the other corner.
Yeah. So good on you, mate. You're living the dream of someone's.
Yeah, man.
All right, well, I'll let you go and enjoy the rest of your weekend, and no doubt we'll bump into each other around the traps.
Yeah, cheers, Scott.
All right, Matt. See you, bud.
Cheers, man. Bye-bye.